sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into Todd McShay entertaining the idea of Evan Mill going at number one and what that could mean for the Houston Texans. But first, let's go out to the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Rico, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
Good, good. I just overheard y'all talking about Annie Ann's pretzels. I got to say, family friend with the founder and creator, Miss Ann Byler. First off, fantastic family the Byler family is. But I got to say, Annie Ann's pretzels are the best pretzels and the go-to pretzels. I will die on that hill. Wet the pretzel, nothing on it. Annie Ann's pretzel all the way. Cinnamon nugget.
Well, Rico, can you? Yeah, cinnamon nuggets are pretty good. Can you hook us up?
I'm sorry, I can't.
Can, thanks a lot, Rico.
Wetzel's pretzels Rico. In a landslide now.
thanks for listening to the Killer Bees, Rico.
Bag, not a cup, Rico.
Rico with a hard sales pitch. Oh, yeah, that's the best. And then can you hook up? Nope, can't. Sorry. You're going to have to buy the $2.99 pretzels on your own. The little cup of pretzels, all you, my man.
Let me just tell you something. True story from back in the suspect Rico. Days. My good friend and my man, Barry Laminack, used to always hit the Chick-fil-A on the way here. And then
like every day?
Like pretty frequently. Maybe not every day.
I could do that. Like if I had the black card, I'd do that every day.
And then when we were doing at the start of every year, we did a health challenge and a weight loss challenge. And so he would go to the non-breaded nuggets. And so we were talking about it. And then I had said I had never had a Chick-fil-A sandwich. The Chick-fil-A on 610 like heard all of this. And they would just regularly come in and bring in food. And they gave us like coupons and cards and everything like that. And they were like the biggest friend of the show. I mean, we can be bribed, but overall, that call did nothing for me because all it told me was, unless you're a friend of the family, you're not going Annie's way. You're going where you should go, to Wetzel's Pretzels. And they have what's called Cinnabites in a bag, hot and fresh, and that's the way to go.
I'll try it. I've never had it. I've never had a
My
Wetzel's
kids
Pretzels.
Love
them. I've never seen one. Like the only one I've seen, I was telling Brendan this during the break, is the ones that are like in construction. I think there's one in construction at Bush. No. I've never seen like a real one.
So at First Colony Mall, they have both. They have around one corner on one of the side routes, they have Auntie Annie's. Mm. And then down the main drag, they have Wetzel's Pretzels.
Okay.
There is no doubt, even if there's a line at Wetzel's Pretzels, and my kids are in on this too, and my wife is definitely in on this, that there is no thinking about going for the cup of pretzels at Annie's. We're going straight to Wetzel's Pretzels.
Fair enough.
And the kids, Lisa likes just the plain ones, although she'll go back and forth. And we get a bag of the Cinnabites for the kids. And you want to talk about just pure ecstasy in terms of a half hour or more of them just sitting at a table having fun and not having to be out of hand, out of control in the mall. That's how you do it.
Very good. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So Todd McShay has entertained the idea that Evan Neal could go at number one. And it's kind of been like this global theme that the top two guys in this draft are Aiden Hutchinson and Thibodeau from Oregon, the two pass rushers. And the idea here is that the Jags would want Evan Neal to protect Trevor Lawrence. They'd want him to protect their franchise quarterback, right? What are your thoughts from a Texans perspective if Evan Neal does go at number one? Does that change your idea about number three at all?
Yeah, I think there's even more reason to trade down. I think the one reason why, and even though I don't believe in it, and you and I both are on the same page with this, the one reason why I could endorse them not trading down is going offensive line, because it's so important and vital to the overall of the team. It's not a quarterback per se in the most valuable position on the field, but I can see how that could be something that would be worth that would be a player in a position group worth going number three with. But if he's gone and all you're talking about is defensive ends, especially with one that's still very raw and the other one that I can see a lot of people, you know, making the comparisons to J.J. Watt and hoping that he pans out to be the next, you have just too many holes to fill to worry about a pass rusher at this point in anybody's career. And he's going to get double teamed because you don't have enough talent on the defensive side of the football. It's trade down, trade down, trade down for me. And the only conceivable mini thought of not trading down would be if Neal's available at three.
See, I'm on the other side of that. Like, to me, it'd be easier for me to keep number three if I'm getting a guy that can get to the quarterback. I'm still going to be open for business, certainly. I'm still going to listen to the trade offers, and I'd still love the idea of trading down. But if I can get either one of the top two pass rushers, and I like Thibodeau more than Hutchinson, actually, I'm cool with that. Like, I'm fine if I get a pass rusher out of this draft, because you've looked at this for a long time. Whenever you look at this draft, and it's Hutchinson and Thibodeau as the top two guys. If I can get one of the edge rushers, I'm all right with that.
Yeah, but if you're getting him, Jeremy, at the price of not being able to get a couple extra picks out of it.
But it's a twofold conversation. Like, let's say you're not getting that offer that you want, and you're stuck at number three. Like, if I'm stuck at number three and I'm getting a pass rusher over Evan Neal, a left tackle, I'm great with that. I'm awesome with that.
That's fine. I hear what you're saying. But I think it's all about supply and demand for one thing. And I think it's kind of, that's why it's almost silly to start talking about this now. Because I think the hot stove's only going to heat up after all the teams do their individual workouts, the combine, and all these other things. And teams start evaluating the true needs that they have. And then all of a sudden, as we've seen time and time again, and I always go back to how Baker Mayfield was supposed to be a late 20s type pick when the process began. And at the end of it, he was the number one overall pick. Sometimes, way out off of our radar at the time, a position group, a player, or a couple of players become a hot commodity or an in-demand type player, and then you have a market you didn't expect to have. I just think that you just look at how blatantly depleted this roster is.
Sure.
I just can't see, unless they exhaust every single possibility of being able to trade down and get at least something more, I just can't see them standing pat and just taking three. But if they did, the one that I would really, that would excite me the most would be an offensive lineman. Although if I had to rate them in order, if I was just saying that this was a more kind of advanced roster, then I could absolutely see that the kid from Michigan would be a good pick here.
What would be your top three? Because I would go Thibodeau, Hutchinson, Neal in that order.
I would not. I would go Hutchinson, Neal, Thibodeau, because I think Thibodeau has too much. He's raw. And I've talked to Lance, and I've also heard Lance talk about it. He's got a ton of skill sets.
Yeah.
But I think, you know what? He's raw. That means you really got to focus. You better get the right line coach. You better get the right guys to coach him up. And there's too many different players that need to be coached up at this point. I think at least when you know with Neal that he's almost a plug-and-play guy. He's an Alabama offensive lineman.
Absolutely.
I think that, unless you're the Raiders, I think that that's pretty much a formula that's going to work for you.
Now, Thibodeau, not to get super nerdy on this, but Thibodeau...
Wait, did you take a deep dive?
No, kind of. But Thibodeau had a better, like, hurry rate than Hutchinson did. And I do think he's, like, a little raw, if that's a word. But he's also, to me, somebody who has a bigger upside. The other side of the conversation to this, though, if Neal does go number one, is that it's easier for someone to be attracted to number three, right? Like, is it easier because there's going to be a pass rusher there at number three if Evan Neal goes number one? It seems like it's possible where the attraction from around the league could go up at number three if Evan Neal goes number one.
I see that. I do. I mean, I see that. I understand what you're saying. But I think I can't be more passionate about this. That, we can sit there and we can talk about Kasaria. We can talk about the head coach. But the thing that still just sits in my craw is how depleted this entire roster is. And also because when looking at the prospects and whether we talk about Kuiper's draft or McShay's draft or whoever's going to – and Lance and all the work that they do, there isn't a franchise-level player at any of these position groups that I can see. I don't think that no matter – who do you think it is?
I mean, I think Evan Neal – oh, you're talking about currently in the roster. I think you meant the draft class.
No, I'm talking about in the draft class. I think
– Evan Neal. I think Thibodeau is. Hutchinson is.
See, but again
– maybe one of the corners.
But here's the thing. No, I don't think the corners are that high.
I think Sauce Gardner more than Stingley.
And I would agree with that. That's why I think that there's not one cut
Hamilton,
and dried.
Hamilton is for a safety, but do you want to draft a safety that high?
And Lance loves him. And I think that, you know what, if you trade down into the lower single digits, into the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 range, and you can get him – especially with Justin Reed's situation, that even makes more sense to me. But I think that when you look at what we're talking about, there normally, and even though, because even with Mahomes, there were rumblings and there was momentum building before that draft that there were too many guys that had real true football minds with different organizations that were just enamored with how good this guy could be. We're not talking about a quarterback. We know that. I don't think we're talking about a Joe Thomas type offensive lineman. But maybe the next best thing, or the guy with the most potential to be that kind of franchise offensive lineman, is Neal. So I'm going to go with that more so than the upside of the athleticism and all the skill sets that Thibodeau has, but he needs to be coached up and developed, right? And he needs to mature in a lot of ways. I can see the you know, some of the other guys as being good at their position group. I don't see anybody that's like a franchise-type player at their position group to where I'm saying, I got to stand pat. It's more important because of how depleted this roster is that I get as many assets as possible.
I'm curious the listener's opinion. If you were drafting right now, and you could pick any of the dudes in this draft, who do you want to be there at number three for the Houston Texans, assuming that you can't trade down? Who do you want to be at number three? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Last night, Rockets went into Utah. They beat the hated Jazz. Now, I mean, there is the game to talk about. There's also the other thing to talk about. Trade deadline is coming up. And the Rockets are only interested in a franchise centerpiece. What that means, and is it even possible? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Rockets win basketball yesterday. They went into Utah. They beat the Jazz. Vernon Maxwell was really pleased about it. He was throwing a bunch of shade.
I saw Dre trying to get him stirred up before the game, and I thought, well, maybe he will, maybe he won't, and then I didn't see anything, and then all of a sudden he just came out guns blazing.
Yeah, yeah. Vernon, he had one tweet. He said, hey, Mario Ellie, call up Rob, Sam, Kenny, OT, Bull, and Dream. Bottle's on me tonight and grab a Hornacek so he can tell us more stories about how Utah sucks. That was funny. Rockets beat the Jazz 116-111. Jazz, good team. It was a good win yesterday for the Rockets.
Okay, but you know, put it in context. Donovan Mitchell doesn't play with a concussion.
Yeah, but they're still
he's their
good
best
team.
Player. He's their best player, okay? Here's what I need people.
Daniel House got 11 minutes last night for the Jazz.
Did you see him trolling the Rockets the other day?
No, I didn't see it.
Oh, he went back and took some tweet from like months and months and months ago and tried to say that now suddenly he was in a better situation. He kind of did do it a Charles Omenihue, but the only thing is you're on a 10-day contract, Daniel House, and you went back to the whole number discussion about not giving Jalen Green the number. I mean, turn the page, bro. I mean, you should have been gone after the bubble. Overall,
do you think Jalen Green's going to go back get the number next year?
I think it'll be next year.
Yeah,
I really do. And especially because they don't have the NFL thing where they make you buy all the other jerseys. NBA, you can just change from year to year. LeBron did it when he changed from 23 to 6.
You have to buy the jerseys
in the NFL. If you do a number change, you are responsible for buying the inventory of the jersey number you are leaving behind.
I had no idea.
Yeah, that's true. So here's my just overall the nuts and bolts of the Rockets last night. Okay. The red Kool-Aid drinkers that think that it was a travesty that Jalen Green spent a good portion of the game on the bench need to relax, need to mute their Twitter, and need to realize for the betterment of the team sometimes, it's better if he sits down. He needs to do as much absorbing, learning, and like overall just witnessing how it's done right sometimes so that he doesn't continue to do wrong. He has had a lot of good. But he also does some things sometimes that warrants him sitting down. It's like the controversy with the Lakers and sitting Russ, only you're not dealing with a guy. A lot of Rockets fans have already anointed Green to be the next kind of guy that's Westbrook and above in terms of comparing him to Kobe. But he's in his rookie year, and mistakes are going to happen. You won a game against a team you weren't supposed to win against. Stop worrying about where Green was late in the fourth quarter and how many minutes he played, and worry about the fact that the guys that were on the court did enough to win the game.
But does it matter about winning the game? Like
I think overall, you obviously don't want to win too much because you want to stay in that bottom three.
My pushback, I guess, is more like I don't care if you're playing the dudes that are like in the best effort to win the game in Utah. Like I want to see Jalen Green develop. More than I want the Houston Rockets
this
to
win.
This
is part of his development, Jeremy.
I would agree with that.
You're developing him by sometimes sitting him down and saying, hey, sometimes it's better if you can just observe. I think we saw it with Kevin Porter Jr. And though, again, he has his lapses too. Mm-hmm. And there's times that he warrants being sat down as well. Don't lose any sleep over it. Because you know what? When he has come up in crunch time, he's come up big. And lately he's making those threes and he's making some good plays. The bigger thing for Silas is, In the crux of the game that means a lot, too, in the meat and potatoes of the middle of the game, guys get caught sometimes just thinking about their stats or going 1-on-4 or making bad decisions. And you need to be reprimanded now so that it doesn't continue to be a bad habit going forward.
That's a great point. And that's very influential to the development as opposed to just getting minutes after you make critical mistakes. I did like Kevin Porter Jr.'s game yesterday, and it wasn't like the clutch three he hit from the left wing late in the game, much like he did in the game winner against Washington. He had 8 assists yesterday against 1 turnover. And, like, that's the kind of development I need to see from Kevin Porter Jr. That's what I need to know about Kevin Porter Jr. going forward. Like, is he a starting caliber player on a playoff team? I thought yesterday he was. And, look, he only scored 15 points. I don't need him to score a ton of points. But if you're scoring 15 with 8 assists and only turning it over one time, that's something I can roll with. That's something that I can have in my starting lineup for whenever I want to be a playoff team.
Exactly.
Again.
That's the development you're talking about, right? And, again, this is to use the Nick Caserio line. You're not talking about wins and losses and how you evaluate this team at the end of the season. It's what do you have on your roster that you, and what are you seeing that you didn't see at the start of the season? Who's developing? Who's not? Who's a role player? Who's got the ability to be more? Who could be an all-star? Who should be cut? Those are the kind of things that I'm evaluating. Even from a Garrison Matthews perspective, great pickup in the short term. Yeah. But in order to be a guy that's going to stick with this team long term, you know, there's things that you want to continue to see him develop and do. DJ Augustine's a guy that the only reason why you're playing him is for trade value. And because there are teams out there that desperately need a veteran point guard or a veteran backup point guard. Right now, your veterans should only be playing to either keep their stock high in the cases of Eric Gordon and Christian Wood, or to try and get value that might create trade buzz before the deadline in a guy like DJ Augustine. Otherwise, John Wall ain't playing, and we know that, but if there's a way you can unload him and it doesn't cost you long-term and you can get some assets back, do it. That's the only reason why Eric Gordon and Christian Wood should be playing anymore and taking shots and minutes away from the guys that you're truly trying to evaluate.
And that's the global big picture with where the Rockets are a few weeks away from the NBA trade deadline. And Sam Amick yesterday, writer for The Athletic, does a bunch of different mediums in basketball. But he tweeted this out, said there's lots of chatter about Houston being even more open for business than previously thought, with one rival executive indicating that there is still on the lookout for they're still on the lookout for a franchise centerpiece and thus open to all sorts of possibilities. Now, this is interesting to me. I'm putting a ton of emphasis on franchise centerpiece. Like, in what world could the Rockets get a franchise centerpiece by this year's trade deadline?
Well, that's what. And again, there's only one possibility, and it depends on how you value this player. But before I get to that, I'm going to encourage everybody to go back on the podcast and listen to what Kevin McHale said, because it lines up exactly what you're saying. There's no way with what you are offering that anybody in their right mind that's a general manager could see fit in giving you someone that's already on the cusp of being or considered a franchise-type player. Now, you may get a draft pick that ends up being a guy that could end up being the potential of a franchise player. But even then, it would take a third team involvement in it, like McHale was talking about. When you look at what you're offering, the only way that the only guy that could be considered that's a franchise player is Ben Simmons. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about that with Daryl Morey, he's eventually going to come off his high horse of 5 first-round picks and all the things he wants, because he's got to save his ass. And right now, with what Joel Embiid did last night with 50 points, there's a narrative that's going to get louder and stronger. You're wasting a season of Joel Embiid and more if you don't do something with Ben Simmons that translates into getting him help so he can be like the Bucks and the Nets and have a chance in the East. The only way also it makes sense is if you believe you could try and find a way to finagle either John Wall into it, because I've said all along, John Wall and Eric Gordon could get you Ben Simmons and change, and that's a better fit for the Houston Rockets than anything else that you got going right now, because you're not just letting dead weight sit there and accumulate checks and John Wall, and Eric Gordon's doing you no good. Ben Simmons, you may get something great, you may not. You know, he might continue to be who he is, or you maybe with John Lucas and others can develop into something more. But guess what? He still has value if you want to flip him, but at the same time, he fits because he doesn't need to consume the shots that Green and KPJ and the young players you want to get them will be taking. And in the short term, he at least has no ceiling in terms of maybe you can help him get his shot. Maybe you can help him get confidence offensively. But you know what he does do? He plays great defense, and he distributes the basketball, and he's a good ball handler. And those are the kind of things, especially with what you do at point guard, if you're letting your small forward do that, and he's facilitating your two young guys in KPJ and Green and even Şengün, then he fits better.
The only, like, the pushback that I have there, because if you look at it from a basketball perspective, it, like, what gives you a better fit, or what, like, how are you better? Are you better with Ben Simmons on the floor versus Eric Gordon and John Wall on the floor? The answer to that is yes from a Houston Rockets perspective, and then the answer to that is yes from a Philadelphia 76ers perspective, because Ben Simmons is not seeing the floor in Philadelphia. The obvious pushback here is the contract that Ben Simmons has. $35 million yeah. next year, nearly 38 2 years from now, and then $40 million the final year of his deal. So if you are bringing in a Ben Simmons, obviously you want to rehabilitate him and then see if he is a franchise player going forward or a franchise centerpiece, or if you want to flip him. The downside of that is you're spending so much money there that you can pretty much eliminate any idea of like free agency and things like that. But the counterpoint to that is how active would the Rockets be in free agency?
And why would
and
you?
What good free agent would come to Houston right. as a rebuild? Organization.
Right. So you already have the majority of what you're going to develop and see what you have, right? And you know that your picks going forward are just going to be basically either worth very little or given away to other teams because of what Daryl Morey did. But if you get a guy that's essentially a lottery pick, that's, yes, he's getting paid a little bit more. Look, what's worse?
A lot more.
Right. For one more year than John Wall has left on his deal, right? Yeah. So you're going to have to eat those years of Wall anyway, and you run the risk of letting him sit for absolutely nothing and just kicking out cash.
You're tacking 2 years onto it.
Yeah, but at least it's an investment that has an upside. You might get a big return on investment on him, and you're right. In the short term, I'm not sure how much you want to win or you're capable of winning and how much you're going to be able to lure a free agent anyway. So you might as well ride with him. And guess what? If he shows that getting out of Philly was a good thing and he got a fresh start and he starts to develop, it's to your Baker Mayfield point when we were talking about it from a Texans perspective. You just got a more valuable asset than anything that you had that could possibly either get you more or that you might decide, hey, I'm good with him. And in a couple of years, that 40 is not going to be that big of a price tag, and I'm better off keeping him.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Could you tolerate the idea of Ben Simmons in Houston? Because that Ben Simmons name right now has some stink on it around the NBA. 713-780-ESPN. When we return, we talked earlier about the coaching candidates that the Houston Texans have either A, interviewed, or B, have shown interest in it. We were talking a lot about Brian Flores. We're on two different sides of it. Where would you rank right now who the Texans have talked to, who you'd most want as the Houston Texans head coach? Kevin O'Connell, the latest name? I'm actually a little high on Kevin O'Connell. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Now, we were having a conversation earlier about Houston Texans candidates. We know that they've interviewed Brian Flores. We know that they've interviewed Vince Lombardi's grandson, Joe Lombardi, who's the offensive coordinator with the Los Angeles Chargers. We know that they've interviewed wide receivers coach from FAU, Hines Ward. We know that they've interviewed the defensive coordinator with the Philadelphia Eagles, Jonathan Gannon. And we know that they're going to interview Kevin O'Connell, who's the current offensive coordinator for the Los Angeles Rams. O'Connell's the latest name because he was the one that's been announced most recently. There's a few things that I do like about Kevin O'Connell. The two positives I have about O'Connell is the first thing is that Brandon Staley, who was the defensive coordinator under Sean McVay before he took the Chargers job, he wanted Kevin O'Connell to come to the Chargers to be his offensive coordinator and his play caller. But you know who said no? Sean McVay said, no, I'm not granting you permission to take him as the offensive coordinator, which you can do that because it's a lateral move. Yeah. Would have been the OC with the Chargers. He's the OC with the Rams. You know who he didn't do that with? He didn't do that with Matt LaFleur. When Matt LaFleur wanted to leave to be the offensive coordinator with the Titans after he was the offensive coordinator for the Rams, McVay was like, go ahead. We all know what Matt LaFleur is doing
that
now.
That is puzzling.
Does it show you how much he thinks of Kevin O'Connell? Does it show you how much he likes having Kevin O'Connell inside that building?
Or does he see that when LaFleur left, it left him too high and dry in terms of responsibilities, level of trust, relationship, communication?
Maybe.
And that he spent a lot of time and effort to develop the next Matt LaFleur, and he doesn't want to make it as easy this time because someone else's gain ends up being too big of a loss for him.
Now, the reason that I like Kevin O'Connell, and the biggest positive that I have, and if we're talking about these five candidates, the ones that have interviewed, the ones that have planned to interview, Brian Flores,
Lombardi's grandson?
Yeah, Joe was.
Oh.
Brian Flores, Joe Lombardi, Hines Ward, Jonathan Gannon, and Kevin O'Connell. Of those five guys, you told us earlier that you would take Brian Flores over all of the other ones. The one that I would take is Kevin O'Connell. I would take Kevin O'Connell over all five of those guys. And the big reason is because Sean McVay's tree. I'll be honest with you. It's the tree of Sean McVay.
Fair.
Zach Taylor was a former offensive coordinator under Sean McVay with the Rams. Was not a play caller, by the way, with the Rams. And he has the Cincinnati Bengals in the playoffs right now. Now, he has a quarterback, so you have to tell the whole story. The fact that he has Joe Burrow is certainly one of the biggest reasons that Cincinnati's there. Matt LaFleur, not a play caller with the L.A. Rams. Look what he's doing now. And then he also had Brandon Staley on his staff, who many people think he did a pretty good job in year one with the last game withstanding with the Chargers. So that tree, Sean McVay and his short time as a head coach is already better than the Bill Belichick tree.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it's obviously got a long way to go before it starts trying to compete with the Bill Walsh tree. But at the same time, look, there's a lot of good signs in looking at what comes off that tree. I think there's a lot more credence than a lot of people are willing to look at in terms of the point that I was making in terms of when you talk about a McVay. The fact that, look, you know what? I want to make the best decisions for my staff, but not at the expense of costing me a lot of time and energy and potentially wins short term when I'm still being evaluated in what I do. So lateral moves, which I understand, and it, you know, could be to the benefit of a guy like Matt LaFleur, who then learned how to call his own plays and got, you know, so highly regarded that he got the Green Bay job. That's great for Matt LaFleur, but he doesn't want to consistently have to do that. And if he has to do that on both sides of the football or in other areas of his football team, he doesn't want to do those kind of things. No matter, I hired you to get to do the job that I hired you to do. And if it's a lateral move, just because it makes more sense for your career, it doesn't help me do what I'm trying to do and why I hired you in the first place. And I've got to be a little bit more judicial in terms of how I grant interviews and let my guys get out of the Rams' offices.
I could talk myself into Kevin O'Connell. The two biggest questions that I would have, the first one would be, is Nick Caserio going to let him have the freedom to do what he wants offensively? Is he going to bring that West Coast style with Sean McVay? And if he's not going to, then I don't know why you would hire Kevin O'Connell. So, like, that to me is the big question. And then the second part of
that last night, I think there's a lot to that too. Like, I don't think Caserio would ever be willing to allow him to do what he knows how to do, which is a West Coast offense.
Which would, if you're going to try to square peg a round hole, then there's no sense of even hiring a Kevin O'Connell. You might as well go the inner circle of the New England Patriots. And the second conversation to that is, like, Kevin O'Connell doesn't have other ties to New England other than he was drafted by the Patriots in 2008 and spent like 14 months as a member of the New England Patriots. So, like, are you letting Kevin O'Connell build his staff as well? And what's the pushback there? I think those are the obvious questions with any of these candidates. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Tyrone, you're in the Hive of the Killer Bees. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, you guys are probably smarter than I am, but I mean,
I
probably could do y'all job if I studied under you guys, your tutelage. I hear the trees, the Sean McVay tree and the Bill Belichick tree. What's happening is that most, even going back to the days of the 49ers quarterback, Bill Walsh and all those, the trees, the one thing most of those guys had in common, because Bill Belichick didn't have that in Cleveland, so he became a great coach, and he was a great coach in Cleveland. They didn't win. Now we've shown that a couple of years without Brady, they didn't win. And I'm a Cowboys fan, by the way. Troy Aikman was with. Just notice the quarterbacks, the Montanas, and things like this here. Now Bill Belichick hasn't won. I'm just saying, coincidentally, McVay switched quarterback, got a quarterback. Now they're a little further along the line. We talk about these trees, but the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You just had the great quarterback guys. And finally, as far as coaching, now, if I wanted to learn to be a radio talk show like you guys and be experts, and I worked under you guys, I probably would get the gist of it and what have you. Now, I know nobody. I don't know if Leftwich or Bieniemy are up for coaching. But if those two are talking to Tom Brady and the other quarterback for Kansas City, they are picking their brains and communicating with them daily. For the Cowboys, I'm a Cowboy fan, and it sucks. I know how much – I know they don't want to get rid of Mike McCarthy or whatever. I know Bieniemy them may not be up. But to grab them and along the lines of the fast, quick receivers, put Pollard in there, and have Bieniemy, a Leftwich talks to the GOAT every day.
I would I'd fire McCarthy, to your point, Tyrone, so I don't disagree with you on that front. I think there's upgrades out on the coaching market that you could hire that'd be better than Mike McCarthy. As far as the Bill Belichick point, look, quarterback versus head coach, which one has more value in the NFL? 100 times out of 100, give me the quarterback over the head coach. So I'm not like pushing back on that at all. The Belichick point where he didn't win in Cleveland's not necessarily true. I mean, he won 11 games in Cleveland in 94 and got a team into the playoffs that hadn't been to the playoffs in 5 seasons. So he did some admirable things in Cleveland, but his career did take off once he had Tom Brady in New England and they won all those championships. So there's credibility to what he said in that regard.
No, there is, but you also can push back on the McVay suggestion because Jared Goff is not a great quarterback. Jared Goff, the jury's out, might only be a good quarterback on his best days. So the fact that when you look at that, you can't say that and go that fits exactly the same formula you're talking about when Belichick got Brady. Sean McVay is a genius of an offensive mind with what he's been able to do, and he gets more credit because he did it with Jared Goff. In a lot of ways, he did it in an ingenious way that I've heard from a lot of people that until the rest of the league caught up to him when he was doing all these different things by innovating the West Coast offense and doing all the different things he did offensively, he also was doing it by being in the quarterback's headset and until the 15-second mark was actually helping him to audible, read defenses, and do things that most coaches wouldn't do, think about doing, or thought was possible to do. So I think that you can't use that analogy and tell me that McVay with Goff fits the same mold. Now, who knew that Brady was going to be what he turned out to be, right? And early on in the stages of Brady's career, he didn't have the clout, the power, and the things you're talking about that he could possibly influence Leftwich with. But also, from the standpoint of what he did from his tree, is he took the entire defensive worries out of the equation. He was such a genius defensively, whether he had Lawrence Taylor when he was with the Giants or what he was able to do, and now how everybody knows Belichick's going to take away one of the things you do best and dare you to beat him another way. He takes the defensive side of all of it off the table so they can just focus on offense because he's going to actually possibly win you some games just what he does defensively.
6183 texting, and I want Brian Flores as the Texans' next coach, but I'm intrigued by Kevin O'Connell and Lombardi just because of the name and the bloodline.
Stop it.
Fascinates me. It's the
Texans. I'm a Packer guy, and I'm telling you, stop it.
713-780-ESPN. If I was ranking these five guys, though, as to like the highest guy, like the one at the top is the one that I want, and then going down from there, I would go Kevin O'Connell. Of these five guys, O'Connell, Flores, Lombardi, Ward, and Gannon, I would go O'Connell, I'd go Gannon, I'd go Flores, Lombardi, Ward in that order. O'Connell, Gannon, Flores, Lombardi, and Ward.
I will just tell you that I'll flip-flop the top, and I'll put Flores as one, and I'll put the two guys that are coordinators at 2 and 3, whether they're calling plays or not.
You're talking about Lombardi and Gannon?
Yeah. And
whoa.
No. I'm talking about your two guys, the Rams guy and the Chargers guy. Or the Niners guy, I'm sorry. The Rams guy and the Niners
guy. The Eagles guy. Gannon's the Eagles guy.
Oh, yeah. Gannon, I take the two coordinators, offensive coordinators.
Well, Lombardi's a coordinator, too. That's why I was confused.
Yeah, okay, I'm way down on Lombardi. I think that he's actually kind of, through osmosis, been able to get a lot more credit than he deserves, and Drew Brees. So I think Flores is the guy because he's been there, done that. And at least you're hiring a guy that's been a head coach. When you look at the rest of the guys, and Hines Ward to me is probably at the bottom because I don't think he's anywhere close to being a head coach, and at best he's a position coach. So I think there's still plenty of guys I gotta believe they're gonna interview.
I trust in the McVay tree. I just don't see any way Caserio hires a dude from the McVay tree. Because
it doesn't make sense with his power hungry and the system that he insists on playing.
Now, it would be encouraging because maybe that's showing that Caserio is willing to give away some of that power. Like, okay, let me just hire the best dude for the job. If he wants to install his offense, I'm going to get out of the way. If he wants to bring in his own assistant coaches, I'm going to get out of the way. And in a lot of ways, that would be incredibly encouraging from a Houston Texans perspective. If Caserio got out of the way, I just don't see it as a likelihood. Still, to me, and nothing has told me otherwise, this is going to be a Patriots guy when it's all said and done. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we come back, one of the Wheelhouse men will join us. How much weight, if any, do they put on the Charles Aminihue comments where he just buried the Houston Texans yesterday? And we'll ask one of them, too, if Girl Scout cookies are overrated. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now I'll tell you about my good friends at Frankie's Italian Kitchen. Look, if you're looking for true, authentic, delicious Italian food at a reasonable price, and it's a great spot for your family, you got to go to Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com right now. I encourage you to do that before you even get anywhere near the restaurant, because basically you get the full menu, and then you also find out about the weekly specials that are only there till they run out, and they are all fantastic. Chris Smith's not only the owner, he's the chef. He makes all the food. He prepares it all fresh, all the ingredients from around the area and from the best places possible. He gets the cheese from Wisconsin. He gets the Italian sausage from College Station. All the produce is fresh. He makes everything so that you want to come back, and when you're sitting in the restaurant, you see someone else trying something else, you want to come back the next time and try that too. It's a perfect family atmosphere. You don't have to get all dressed up. It's not foo-foo, and they don't worry about which fork you use. They worry about how much food you've had. Are you full? Are you happy? And when you leave, are you coming back? Because your wallet's going to leave fat, and so is your belly, because the food is filling, the servings are big, and the prices are affordable. It's the way Chris wants his restaurant run, like a family spot that you just want to go to get out of the house, relax, and have some great food and some good memories. That's the way they set it all up. That's why their pizza and their wings, if that's the way you want to go, are just top shelf. And the pizza oven makes that crisp perfect. The wings and all the different varieties, absolutely delicious. But then you want to get into the beef stroganoff or the lasagna and all the other options that you have for all the true Italian dishes. They are to die for. Fantastic. They're in the Katy Richmond area, but I'm telling you, it's worth the drive no matter where you're coming from in Houston. Go to Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com. Tell them Joel Blank sent you by.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Brad Kellner joining us on the Killer Bees, one of the three of the Wheelhousemen that you can listen to each and every day, Monday through Friday, on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Most days 3 to 7. They can cut out early sometimes when Texas A&M's playing basketball. They lost a close one to Kentucky last night.
They did.
For sure.
Game that they could have won. What did you say,
Thanks
Joel?
For sharing.
Thanks for sharing that, yeah. A&M.
I'm sure everybody was looking for the Aggie update.
I mean, we're the Houston Aggie.
I understand
Aggie
what we are.
Network.
I don't like cutting short the Wheelhouse.
We're not cutting short the Wheelhouse. Oh, no. On game day. I get it. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Charles Amenihue's comments about the Texans had a lot to say about his tenure this season under the watch of Nick Caserio, David Culley, Jack Easterby. How much stock are you putting in the comments of Charles Amenihue?
So my question to Charles would be, is he only talking about this year, or is he talking about his entire three-year tenure in Houston? Like, I don't know if all of those comments were directed toward the Nick Caserio Texans.
Good question.
Yeah.
He went through a lot, man. And he was drafted by Brian Gain, then Brian Gain's gone, then he's got Bill O'Brien as the GM, and Jack Easterby in as well. Then O'Brien gets fired, then he's got Romeo, then he's got Culley. So it was a whirlwind of a two-and-a-half-year tenure for Charles Amenihue here in Houston. So I understand why he feels that way, and I just want to know if he's talking more about this regime or his entire time
here's
here in
Houston. Here's the scariest part of that, BK. It's conceivable he could be talking about every year that he was here and all of the above, which means you can get to start to the bottom of how much of a circus it's been.
No doubt. Look, Charles Amenihue was really good in the preseason. You can scoff and say it's the preseason, but he was top three in the NFL in sacks. He looked like this team's best pass rusher going into the season, and then he's inactive a bunch of games during the regular season. So, yeah, that was all this year under Nick Caserio. No surprise that he said the things that he said, and yeah, I don't think it shocks any
Texans. It's refreshing, I think, because we finally had a guy that came out with more than just kind of generalizations and like innuendo.
And I don't know if y'all watched the press conference. The question was asked about 3 minutes in. He talked about a bunch of other stuff. You know, Niners going up against the Packers this weekend. But as soon as he was asked the question, like he was leaning back, kind of relaxed away from the mic, the question gets asked, and he perks up, puts his hands on the table. He's like ready. Yeah. So he had that ready to go. He wanted to talk about his time in Houston.
He had a little smirk on his face when he did it, too. Like a little bit of a smirk and a little bit of a chuckle. Like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
It's interesting, too, two things that you said there. It's a good question about, like, where, like, is he talking about his entire tenure or this year? He said something during that press conference, though, where he said, I expected things to be different going into my third year. So, like, my best judgment, based on your question, I feel like he was talking solely about the 2021 season.
Look, we've seen this a lot this year. It feels like Nick Caserio at times is trying to distance himself from the Bill O'Brien, Jack Easterby regime with the Cunningham move, with the Whitney Merciless move. and obviously the Deshaun situation.
With like the press conference or the interview last week.
Absolutely, absolutely. So maybe this is a case of like Nick Caserio just kind of wanted a clean slate, and he wanted to get rid of anybody who was drafted or extended by the previous regime, and maybe that's why Charles got the short end of the
stick.
That's
not far-fetched, and I'll tell you why. The people that I know and the people that are inside that building still felt that way even on the business side. If you were a Bill O'Brien guy, if you were some of the people that were elevated, promoted, or brought in because of Bill O'Brien, they wanted a complete cleansing. The only problem with all of that is on both sides, the football side and the business side, there's one guy that you can't rid yourself of that you will, until you do, is that black cloud that's throwing that shade on a daily basis in Jack Easterby.
Yeah.
Brad Kellner joining us on the Killer Bees. We talked earlier about Girl Scout cookies in addition to Charles Omenihu marrying the Houston Texans. Do you think Girl Scout cookies are overrated, as Joel thinks they are?
Absolutely not. I support troops. I support the troops, unlike Joel and Brendan. I'm a full-blooded American male, and I appreciate what they do for us.
You done now?
I done now.
Yeah, well, here's the scenario.
I actually just polished off a box of peanut butter patties earlier today.
Did you really?
I did. Still have them from last year. Did they expire a few months ago? Yes. Do I care? No, still very good.
So let me ask you a question. Yes, you're at the mall in the food court, walking straight. I don't know if you heard this before, but I'm going to give it to you now.
Yeah.
You're walking straight down the middle, okay? There's no influence one way or the other. There's a couple of trays with the people that are wanting you to sample. You either get your best, like, out-of-the-package, sterile Girl Scout cookie, or you get a hot Mrs. Fields chocolate chip or whatever your favorite flavor is right there in front of you. Which one are you picking?
Who's selling the Girl Scout cookies? Is it the girls or the parents?
I'm not looking for a date.
That's
an
important question.
No, I'm not looking for a date either. I'm not going to, like, support parents who are doing the girls' jobs for them. I want to, like, it makes the girls' day
it's
when somebody walks
cookie,
up to them.
It's about the cookie, not the server. All I'm asking is, from your palate's perspective, which one are you grabbing?
Let's see, $4.
You only get one. You don't have to pay for either.
Well, the box. I get the whole box of Girl Scout cookies versus just one Mrs. Fields.
Let's go a different direction, BK, because this isn't going anywhere fast or slow. If you had to rate Girl Scout cookies on the overall grand scale of cookies, not during Girl Scout season, but you had to say the top three cookies of all time. Is a Girl Scout cookie in your top three? Thank you. Next question.
They're trying to lead the jury here a little bit.
I'm not leading them at all. Yeah. I'm telling you why I said they were overrated, because it's only during Girl Scout cookie season that they even would be on your radar. Otherwise, whether you go Oreos or chocolate chips or whatever your cookie of choice is, there's too many good selections to say, I'm going to put the Thin Mints at number three.
The question was, are they overrated? I mean, we all of a sudden were walking through malls and people are handing out things.
You turned it into me saying they're overrated. I'm just saying, in the grand scheme of things, they're not in the top three of anybody's cookies of all time.
Are you Mrs. Fields' brother? Like Auntie Ann's brother called in earlier today. I'm curious if you're working for Mrs. Fields. Are you Mr. Fields?
No.
What's going on here?
No, I could, and you know what? In a lot of ways, I still might be a Keebler elf, but it doesn't matter. I'm telling you, those cookies are good, too.
Those are good, too. Yeah.
So are they in your top three? Any Girl Scout cookies even sniff in your top three, Piper?
The peanut butter patties are sniffing the top three.
Of your all time?
My all time.
So what were the top two? Because if you have to bounce something, because Oreos, chocolate chips, Chips Ahoy. I don't know what your flavors
chips
are.
Chips Ahoy are not good.
Big Tiff's Treats fan.
Okay, well, there you go.
That's definitely
best cookie in the city.
Yeah, huge fan of that.
I don't think they're in your top three.
What else?
I think you're just trying to. I think you're trying to justify a point you don't really believe in.
I don't know.
I think you're trying to change his mind.
I think you're either on the highway to hell or in cardiac arrest on that other AM dial. I don't think you're giving us your true. I don't think you're giving
you
us your
put
true.
Put me on the spot like this. This
I don't
is
think
a
you're
serious question
your
you've asked me.
From the heart decision.
You're asking me to power rank cookies. Like, I don't.
Yeah,
just have
power
this
rank
the,
your cookies.
I got
to do it.
I got to do research. I got to go to the store, taste test some things. Like, it's been a while since I've had all these cookies. I just ate the peanut butter patties.
You were given a warning. You heard the tease. You knew it because you
I didn't have enough time to go to HEB and buy every cookie in there.
It doesn't matter. You have a palate. You tried to digest 9,000 calories at McDonald's. You know what you like and what you don't like.
Okay, well, I like McDonald's more than Girl Scout cookies.
So you want the Hamburglar cookies they give you in that little box of cookies?
Yeah, if I get the toy, too.
Are they better than the freaking Girl Scouts?
No, but the toy makes it a toss-up.
I've heard about you and toys.
Yeah,
okay,
fan.
So go ahead. Give me your top three cookies.
This is what happens when you disagree with Joel.
I know.
I'm not going away easily.
Okay, tomorrow I'll come back and I'll have my top three cookies.
Will Girl Scouts be one of them?
We'll see.
I don't think so.
He's got to power rank them. Robert and Tomball brings up a good point. If the Girl Scout cookies are so good, why did it take you over a year to finish the box?
Oh, I bought a lot of boxes.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, Girl Scout cookies.
Oh, I mean, on your salary, I can see that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I'm working for free. Great pickup line at the bar, by the way, or just at any party.
Because right.
For the single
one. Go
dudes
ahead.
Out there. I know, not for you guys, but just giving some advice
Brendan,
to our
Brendan
people.
Brendan might be interested.
You show up, you give out some Girl Scout cookies, be surprised how far that gets you.
Give out Girl Scout cookies at the bar.
Yeah.
That sounds like a terrible idea.
Just be like, hey, you buy me a awful. Drink, I'll give you Girl Scout cookies. The drink is more expensive, and I don't have to wait in line at the bar. And the girl's like, oh my God, I'm drunk, and I'm getting Girl Scout cookies. This is amazing.
Wait, well, first of all, you don't have a name. You go by initials, and then you're pulling Girl Scout cookies out of your pocket, and I don't know where they came from, and you're trying to use those.
Oh, they came
those
from the mall that I was at when I bought them instead of Mrs. Fields.
That might be the stupidest idea I've ever
buy them.
Heard
they
you
were
say,
given
though.
To.
I'll admit.
It works.
Is that pocket fuzz that's attached to one of them or something else?
Don't worry about that. Don't
All
worry
right.
about
just
that.
Just asking.
Don't ask too many questions.
Uh-huh.
He just said it works. Like, this has been something you've tested, tried, and through. Okay.
I prefer it at the house party, though, because it's a little less weird than showing up to a bar with a box of Girl Scout cookies. But I'm telling you, man.
You hand out lemon squares, you can get some Hall of Fame votes. What's coming up on the Wheelhouse?
Oh. 4 hours of cookie talk.
You got 4 hours.
We're going to power rank Girl Scout cookies, power rank McDonald's toys, because now my mind is right there. We'll talk about what these candidates should be asking Nick Caserio when interviewing for this Texans job. Because I think there's a lot that if I'm a head coaching candidate interviewing for multiple jobs that I want to know about this Texan situation before I even consider taking it. And we'll get into the Scott Boras conversation as well. Mark Berman.
Yeah,
he lives in a duffel bag at the airport.
Yeah,
someone said that.
It's amazing. Does he track my flights?
Like, Sing 2, by the way, are the toys right now with Happy Meals.
Is that right?
Yeah, because the kids are collecting them at my house.
Have you seen that movie yet?
I have not, but I know that one song in particular is on complete replay at my house. They remade Elton John's I'm Still Standing as part of Sing 2, and my daughters, when I tell you can't get enough.
Sorry.
Sounds like a lot of fun. Caserio himself said he's already been asked one question by candidates. He admitted it himself. It was the headsets. He said he's been asked by candidates about the headsets. So
I think he was also asked who the hell likes Girl Scout cookies. If he doesn't like barbecue and he doesn't like Tex-Mex, does he like Girl Scout cookies?
No chance. He doesn't like carbs.
Coming up next on the Wheelhouse.
All right, it's going to do it for us. And thanks to Brendan for all his hard work. He's Blank on Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. The Wheelhouse next on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.